Good morning. Welcome everybody to the January 9th Sussex County Council meeting. First thing is the approved agenda, Mr. Lawson.
Thank you, Mr. President. Good morning, members of council. One note on the agenda, I guess we could amend the agenda under my name, proclamation Cape and Levin Field Hockey Team. I would note that the field hockey team is asked to come at a future meeting due to the weather today. Other than that, no other changes to the agenda.
Motion to approve the agenda is amended.
So moved.
Motion, Mr. Cole, second, Mr. Wilson. Any questions? Take the vote, Mr. Arlett.
Yes.
Mr. Burton.
Yes.
Mr. Wilson.
Yes.
Mr. Cole.
Yes.
I have a yes, motion carried. We had the minutes of January the 2nd. Any corrections or additions, questions? Hearing none, they'll stand approved. Reading of correspondence, Mr. Moore.
I have none, Mr. President.
Any correspondence of council?
Several emails. Lots of emails regarding the ordinance, which is after the record was closed.
Correct.
So I just wanted to bring that up. Could you maybe add to what is in the record, what's not in the record, based on these emails we've received since then?
Any additional emails received should not be considered in your decision because the public hearing was closed. The public record was closed as well.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
Any more correspondence with council? Public comments. Public comment, Mr. Guy. And I would remind everyone that we have not rendered a decision yet on the two ordinances we heard last week, the right to work and the commercial zoning. So that should not be part of public comment today. Mr. Dan Kramer.
My name is Dan Kramer. I want to try to show you guys what I'm after. Let's see.
Wow. Technical.
Broadcast chambers. Hope this don't take too long.
You only got
look. Up there to the right-hand side, so you all can see it, there's a search bar. So therefore, you ought to be able to search for your item, right? Now, oops, let me go back this way. Council meeting today.
Dan, this is user friendly.
Yeah, okay.
This is user friendly.
Yeah, it is real. It is like
supposed to be.
Supposed to be. All right. Hopefully it now comes up. All right. Now you guys can see your ugly faces.
And yours.
And mine. And I will admit my face is ugly. That's one thing I can guarantee you. My face is ugly. I don't know whether you guys want to say that or not. But here's the problem. This afternoon, at some point, when this show is completely over, this thing will be wiped out. Now, I ought to be able to, like I told you before, there's a search bar. I ought to be able to hit that search bar and look back and bring it back up. Instead of,
Dan, this is user-friendly.
And,
this is user-friendly.
That,
yeah, it is.
And then it takes me 15 minutes to get it. And then it takes me 5 hours to download it.
Supposed to be.
This needs to be corrected.
Right.
That thing is no excuse.
All right, now you guys can see your own face.
Yours. And mine.
Readily available.
And I want to admit my face is over. That's one thing I can guarantee. I had a phone call. But here's the problem. This afternoon, at all.
At some point.
The only way I can retrieve it now is I gotta kiss him and take the 15 days to get the stupid thing.
I ought to be able to, I told you before, there's a search bar.
Thank you, sir.
I ought to be able to hit that search bar and look back and bring it back up.
I didn't realize so much kissing was going on.
I would remind you that if this is concerning the right to work ordinance at all, we would not have any discussion on that. Okay, thank you.
I did want to speak, but I won't. My name is Betty McGrath, 137 West Shore Drive, Milton, Delaware. And what I will address this morning is something that I spoke with President Michael Vinson about at the end of the meeting last time. It regards procedure. I want to thank the members of the council and the staff of the council for their diligence and stamina last Tuesday during the public hearing, but particularly President Michael Vinson, who after 5 hours of emotional public testimony remained seated on the dais and graciously agreed to answer a question I asked him about the procedures in the public hearing. Regarding this, I have a question and suggestion that I think the council may want to consider for the future. In regular public comment today, we have a 3-minute limit. Apparently, public hearing comments do not have that limit. Was that my understanding?
Correct.
It seems, given what we experienced last time, you may want to reconsider that. A 3-minute limit seems reasonable, and if someone wanted to speak again, they could go back on the list. But having unlimited time seems like not the best policy, especially when it's a hot issue that a lot of people want to speak to. Also, one of the speakers last Tuesday, Mr. Burdett, showed 2 media presentations. And this is what I asked President Vinson about, and I said I thought that was pretty outrageous that he showed these presentations. And President Vinson said that there is no rule expressly prohibiting it, and therefore it was allowed. I think the council may want to look at that for the future. If you allow media presentations and unlimited time, you've opened up a Pandora's box that could leave you with meetings that never end. Again, I thank you for your diligence last week and the opportunity to speak on the issue last week.
That's a good point.
Thank you.
We have actually talked amongst ourselves sometimes that we thought that we should be addressing that. Right.
Good.
Right.
Right.
Are you against filibuster?
No. Certain people could take advantage.
Next thing on our agenda is a consent agenda. We have 5 items. Wastewater agreement number 638-16, Sussex County project number 81-04, estuary phase 1C, 3B, construction record, and Miller Creek Sanitary Sewer District. Wastewater agreement number 1038-5, Sussex County project number 81-04, governor's phase 2, Western Hub expansion of the Dubuque Sanitary Sewer District. Wastewater agreement number 107-4, Sussex County project number 81-04, Schofield phase 4, Western Hub expansion of the Dubuque Sanitary Sewer District. Wastewater agreement number 1017-5, Sussex County project number 81-04, Schofield phase 5, Western Hub expansion of the Dubuque Sanitary Sewer District. And wastewater agreement number 856-12, Sussex County project number 81-04, Sea Star Village at Millville by the Sea, section 3, Millville expansion of the Bethany Beach Sanitary Sewer District. Any questions on any of those 5? Hearing none, entertain a motion to approve the consent agenda.
So moved.
Motion, Mr. Arlett. Second, Mr. Wilson. Questions on a motion? Take the roll call. Mr. Arlett?
Yes.
Mr. Burton?
Yes.
Mr. Wilson?
Yes.
Mr. Cole?
Yes.
I vote yes. Motion carried. Mr. Lawson?
Thank you, Mr. President. Only one item today on the County Administrator's Report. Item number 1, county offices will be closed on Monday, January 15th for the Martin Luther King Jr. holiday. Offices will reopen on Tuesday, January 16th at 8:30, and council will meet at 10 a.m. on the 16th. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, sir. Next thing is old business. Mr. Moore, last week when we closed our hearing, I asked you if you'd be prepared to present your opinion to us this week. I know we got that in the email. Would you be, hopefully you can give us a Reader's Digest version, not read all the pages, but give us the highlights of your others and synopsis of your opinion?
Okay, if that's council's desire, I will. And if I could give just kind of a little background to the opinion, too, because there's been a lot of questions concerning what is going on, kind of the background. In late 2016, I know I received a communication from someone who was a member of the Cesar Rodney Institute, and I think every member of the council probably did. It was just a press release that there had been a case in Kentucky where a county had enacted the right-to-work legislation. Shortly thereafter, Mr. President, you gave me your copy and asked, could I look into that, just see if that was something that was legal or not. We took a quick look at it, and at that point, my concern was, just because someone in another state does it doesn't mean that we can necessarily do it. And then in late December, and actually it was December 21st of 2016, I had a discussion with a Cesar Rodney Institute member, Jim Mercer Marcel, who is someone I know quite well, and he indicated that he would like to send me some background materials on the right-to-work proposal and rationale. Mr. Vincent, I reached out to you and Mr. Lawson, said, is this something that you would like me to proceed with and take a look at? And you indicated yes, because they were the ones providing the information. Let's take a look at it. In February, I did receive emails, some follow-up information, and then they sent videos, I've got some polling information. And then in March 9th, we had a phone conversation. During that phone conversation, an associate and I were on a teleconference with Mr. Ursa Marcel, and at that point, we clearly indicated to him that, in my opinion, Delaware Home Rule Statute does not permit this, and we indicated what that limitation portion of the our Home Rule Statute said. He indicated that he had not picked that up, had not seen that. He wanted to take a look at it. And also we referenced a couple of cases and asked if we would send that to him. We did. Then later in March, he indicated to me that he was going to, thanks for the information we'd given, they needed to take a look at that, and they were going to hire their own attorney to take a look at it. Part of the reason I bring this up, there was some statements that we did not do any research on this beforehand. We made them hire an attorney. Well, it was our office found that there was a problem with this, and then as a result of that, they wanted to retain counsel to take a look at it. Then later in April, we were contacted by the attorney, who's Mr. Kittila, who's been here and who submitted opinion. And asked that we schedule a meeting, sit down with him. He wanted to present us information. Frankly, we thought, well, apparently there were some things maybe we had missed in our research, or maybe there's some other cases out there that would explain this. And when we had the meeting, frankly, my associate and I were, we left the meeting with no change in our opinion whatsoever. There was more discussion on the not our right to work statute, but also a New Mexico case, and more on the preemption, that his feeling was that this case would be decided on the preemption, which is the federal issue, as opposed to the home rule issue. I expressed my concern, stating I can't believe any case such as this, when we have such a basic issue as the home rule statute, that wouldn't be looked at too in state court as well as federal court challenge. After that, there would be different conversations requesting a meeting. My comment each time, have you found anything that proves me wrong? Have you found anything that either overturns, modifies, or alters the cases that I've submitted? And always the answer was no. But then they scheduled a meeting, and at that meeting, I did not realize that you were being invited, Mr. President, and Mr. Burton. and all of you came to the meeting in my office. There was also, besides Mr. Ursamarso and Mr. Hittala, but they also brought in the attorney from Kentucky who had been involved in the case. During that meeting, at times it was quite testy, but it was trying to get the facts, and I just kept coming back to, you have not addressed our home rule statute. And at one point towards the end of the meeting, I turned to Mr. Yesen and asked him, in Kentucky, do you have the same language in your home rule that we have in Delaware, that we have for Sussex County? His answer was no. So I remain committed that we had a problem with our home rule statute. In preparing my opinion today, and what I had, so when I gave you that opinion when you asked earlier, that was not, as some have characterized, an off-the-cuff opinion. In fact, it was an opinion that I had spent quite a few months looking at. Since that opinion came out, there's been things that were introduced in the record, the legal opinions from the Department, Delaware Department of Justice, the United Food and Commercial Workers Union, Local 27, the Cesar Rodney Institute, Mr. Cotilla's letter, the Delaware General Assembly Legislative Attorney Division of Research, Tom Neuberger submitted an opinion, and Ron Smith, the attorney for the Minority Caucus of the Delaware House of Representatives. I looked at all of that information, plus all the case law that I had been reviewing over the months, as well as, you know, I sat in the public hearing, so I was able to get information during the public hearing. I was, and there had been some discussions before. I thought that we would see the same list of attorneys at the public hearing submitting opinions for my consideration. But Mr. Cotilla was the only one that was here. There was one retired attorney that introduced himself that I referred to in my opinion. So that's kind of the background. My analysis was broken down into several steps. First was on home rule. The state code grants county powers under what's commonly known as a home rule statute, and it's in 9 Delaware Code 7001. And it states, and I'm not going to read the entire thing, but in pertinent part, the government of Sussex County established for this chapter shall assume and have all powers which under the Constitution of the state it would be competent for the General Assembly to grant by specific enumeration and which are not denied by statute. That seems pretty clear, and you would just read that and think, well, they do have the power. However, the Home Rule Authority permits the county any power that General Assembly is competent to grant, excluding any powers denied by statute, but it does not include the power to enact private or civil law concerning civil relationships except as incident to the exercise of an expressly granted power, which we refer to as a private law exception. The right to work prohibitions in the proposed ordinance disallow union security agreements for private employers. Since this ordinance proposes to regulate contracts between employees, employers, and unions, this private law exception is the critical language in determining whether the county has been granted the authority by the Home Rule Statute to enact the right to work ordinance. Delaware state courts have not directly addressed whether the passage of right-to-work legislation or any other type of county legislation impacting employment contractual relationship is consistent with a county's home rule authority. However, as attorneys, we look at the cases that are out there. The home rule authority and this private law exception have been examined in other contexts. In the 1976 case of Weldon Farms, a court of chancery found that the private law exception is the context of a drainage issue between two landowners foreclosed Newcastle County from creating a private law action that would override Delaware judicial precedent. And then it went on to the Supreme Court, and these cases reiterate that the county cannot foreclose an existing private action under its home rule authority, as the county lacks the power to create a private law action under home rule that's granted. A more recent 2002 decision considered whether a county ordinance could create a private cause of action under negligence per se, and cited favorably the prior case that I referenced. The court found that if the county cannot foreclose a private cause of action, it also cannot create one. Thus, the court again, and this was the Supreme Court, affirmed the private law exception by declining to allow a county ordinance to serve as a basis for a civil right of action to sue. Without question, this right to work ordinance, if adopted, creates the basis for a private civil action between citizens for any violations of this ordinance, and with Delaware cases expressly stating that the county may not create a private cause of action, it is my opinion that under current Delaware law, a court will find that the private law exception to the county's home rule authority prohibits the county from enacting this ordinance. Now, we wanted to look at other opinions that were submitted, in particular Mr. Cotillas. Prior to the public hearing, as you know, two attorneys opined that I was wrong in my analysis. And Mr. Cotillas' opinion was very detailed and is worthy of examination. First, he gives some historical background to the Home Rule statute, and then he embarks on analysis of Delaware cases, in which he concludes that the 1982 Delaware Supreme Court case of Workman v. Hickman is the most closely aligned with our home rule statute issues with a right to work ordinance. This case concerned a county council district reapportionment and examined whether Sussex County may adopt a reapportioned ordinance under the home rule statute. The court upheld the reapportionment ordinance, noting several factors, and they included the fact that there was a court mandate, and also there was the constitutional requirement, and there was a prior grant of authority under our levy court. As Mr. Michael Fanning, a retired labor attorney who pointed out in his testimony at the county council public hearing, none of these factors in Workman mentioned a private law exception. The proponent's reliance on this decision clearly misses the mark, in my opinion, since the focal concern is whether the right-to-work legislation may run afoul of the private law exception. In Workman, the private law exception is not examined or discussed at all, and it is certainly not part of the court's decision. The final part of Mr. Cotillas' submission delves into decisions in other states and primarily relies upon a New Mexico case. In that case, a Santa Fe passed a city law which gave city employees a higher minimum wage than the state or federal minimum wages. There was challenges in that, but when we looked at the case, number one, the private law exception in that case is different than the private law exception in our county home rule case. In addition, there was a certain power given by the state to the municipalities for the purpose of general police powers, which included wages and other similar circumstances. And it is very, that exception is very similar to the one in Delaware that's given to municipalities, but not to the county. Mr. Cotillas' letter offers a summary of this case, but fails to take into account the differences with this ordinance. First, as I indicated, their language for the private law exception is different than the language for Second County. Second, the court cited to another New Mexico state statute which explicitly grants municipalities generic police and general welfare powers, and cited to cases that held wages are part of those statutory general welfare powers. Finally, at various points in this council process for this ordinance, there have been repeated references to a case in Kentucky that I previously alluded to. This case has been cited as authorizing counties to proceed with enacting right-to-work legislation. This is patently false, in my opinion. The Hardin County Ordinance did not cite to a home rule statute for its authority, and the home rule analysis had no part in that decision. In fact, Hardin County is considered a fiscal court, which is granted a list of powers from the state of Kentucky. The power to regulate commerce for the protection and convenience of the public was one of those listed powers, and it was enacted on that basis. So therefore, just because some other county has done that does not give Sussex County the automatic right to do that. We have to look at their underlying legislation. The next thing we examined was the preemption issue and the federal issues. This ordinance, in my opinion, may also be challenged under the NLRA, or the National Labor Relations Act. It is a federal law that regulates private sector employment. The NLRA permits, under certain conditions, a union and a private employer to make an agreement called a union security agreement that requires employees become union members as a condition of employment. However, every employee has the option to decline full membership and instead pay a portion of the union dues, referred to as agency fees, and we heard that during the testimony, to the union in order to retain jobs. The NLRA has an exception to this authority for union security agreements for states. Specifically, the NLRA states that the Act shall not be construed as authorizing the execution or application of agreements requiring membership in a labor organization as a condition of employment in any state or territory in which such execution or application is prohibited by state or territorial law. In other words, the states are clearly permitted to enact right-to-work legislation that prohibits union security agreements, but only recently have local entities made a concerted effort to challenge the assertion that the states include local entities. So what they're arguing is that states do not mean one of our 50 states, but any subdivision of the states as well. There is no existing authority in the Third Circuit. Third Circuit is the circuit of the federal court system that governs Delaware. There is no existing authority in the Third Circuit or the United States Supreme Court that permits this reading of state to include the political subdivisions of the state. Only five courts have directly addressed the central question here. Does the NLRA preempt a right-to-work ordinance passed by a political subdivision of a state? I've reviewed every one of those cases. Of those five cases, only one has found that a local right-to-work ordinance was valid. In fact, according to a Harvard Journal, that's a Harvard Law Review article, on legislation article published this past summer, the only court in the last 50 years to affirm a local entity right to enact right-to-work legislation under the NLRA exemption is the Sixth Circuit case, the Kentucky case. It was, at some points, it was referred to as, well, the Supreme Court has now adopted this, approved it. What the Supreme Court did was deny a petition to hear the appeal of the Sixth Circuit case. Thus, the Sixth Circuit case stands as the valid law in the states that it covers. Those states are only four: Kentucky, Michigan, Ohio, and Tennessee. And the case may influence, but will not control, any decision by the Third Circuit or the United States Supreme Court. The counties under the Sixth Circuit jurisdiction may enact right-to-work legislation unless the United States Supreme Court later takes up the right-to-work issue and overrules this case. The ordinance proponents have repeatedly referenced the Sixth Circuit case, but at this point in time, it is the only decision that supports their contention that the ordinance is valid under the NLRA. Since the decision of the Sixth Circuit in November of 2016, another court has taken up this issue. This time, the U.S. District Court for the Northern District of Illinois considered whether the Village of Lincolnshire's right-to-work ordinance was preempted and came, they came to the opposite conclusion. So this is a case after the Kentucky case that has come in. Now, it is in the federal court system, and at the lower court level, they have come to a completely different conclusion. In that case, the court considered the same precedent as the Hardin County case, but respectfully disagreed with the Sixth Circuit's conclusion. The court first noted that the overall purpose of the NLRA was to displace state regulation of industrial relations, with the sole exception being the provision that allows states to prohibit union security agreements. Thus, the Hardin case is not the last word regarding whether this ordinance would be preempted by the NLRA, and there is sound reasoning, which I find persuasive, upon which other courts have relied to reach a different outcome than the Sixth Circuit. Therefore, I do not believe the ordinance is likely to survive a challenge under the federal issue of the NLRA preemption. During the public hearing, too, I was surprised that the proponents, there was no specific legal analysis made by the proponents of the ordinance on the federal preemption issue. The written submission from the attorneys in support of the ordinance made no mention of this major legal hurdle that the ordinance must overcome. We did have verbal testimony, and that was regarding the Taft-Hartley Act, also known as the Labor Management Relation Act, and the NLRA preemption, and that was given by Mrs. Patricia Fry and Mr. Tom Jones, which addressed several of the points above. It is undisputed that the Sixth Circuit upheld the Hardin County ordinance, but the Sixth Circuit decision is not binding on the Third Circuit, which is the controlling jurisdiction of Sussex County's ordinance. There was also some discussion concerning recent ordinance that's been enacted by the City of Seaford. I would like to point out I'm not getting into a legal analysis of the municipal law, but just to point out that municipal law is different. Their enabling legislation is different than the county home rule statute. But even though that's similar, what I've stated concerning the federal preemption issues would still be an issue. Other labor issues in the ordinance. The ordinance also includes regulation regarding the payment deductions for union dues, also known as dues checkoff provision, in proposed section 117-4, and regulations regarding the acts of union intimidation or coercion of employees or their families in proposed section 117-6. Neither set of regulations directly relate to the right to work provision in the ordinance and are separate and distinct issues. In fact, if you review the Sixth Circuit's decision, the Kentucky case, that overturned that portion, the dues checkoff provision, in their ordinance due to its preemption by the Labor Management Relations Act. The Village of Lincolnshire case also held that the dues checkoff provision in that ordinance was invalid. Sussex County should be aware of and address these additional union issues. But there is no testimony or evidence in the record upon which council can make a decision on these aspects. Even if my opinion is disregarded with respect to the right to work portion of this ordinance, I urge council to consider an amendment of the ordinance to remove the provisions that do not directly address right to work. In conclusion, after a review of the existing Delaware cases interpreting Delaware's home rule authority and the private law exception, it is my opinion that a Delaware court is unlikely to uphold this ordinance in its current form. In addition, as discussed above, the ordinance may be preempted by the NLRA. If either or both legal hurdles are not met, the ordinance will be invalidated. So you've got a situation where we would have to be successful on both case, state court and federal. Furthermore, so a corollary amendment to the budget may need to be introduced to provide funds for to the county to perform functions and duties assigned to the county pursuant to this ordinance, because there were certain obligations that were placed on, and that was not discussed in the public hearing. Finally, at the public hearing and in prior testimony, several have mentioned that certain organizations have offered funding and or pro bono legal services to defend any potential challenges to this ordinance. If, despite this legal opinion, council decides to pass this ordinance, I strongly recommend and urge that the council submit the question of whether such funds or services may be accepted to the State Public Integrity Commission. All council members are subject to the state's code of conduct, which states the following: no state employee, state officer, or honorary state official shall accept other employment, any compensation, gift, payment, or expenses, or anything of monetary value under circumstances in which acceptance may result in the following: one, impairment of independence of judgment in the exercise of official duties, and number four on that, any adverse effect on the confidence of the public in the integrity of the government of the state. The council has adopted these, so we're bound by those. So, Mr. President, I gave as brief a synopsis as I could. The opinion, as you know, was 11 pages, but
thank coming you. From an attorney.
Thank you for the Reader's Digest version. I'm sure all of us have read all the pages. We're going to move. Any questions of council? We're going to move forward here.
Number one, I want to publicly thank our county attorney for providing the detailed analysis. And as I stated last week, it was concerning to me that some opinions were out there that were based on something that was not in the record. So I just I do want to appreciate you publicly for providing that. And it's been a lot to digest, I would say. I'm sure even for the public to digest what you've just shared. So let alone us, as I'm not an attorney or the other members. So I just would like to, you know, further digest what you've just said, because you've even stated, you know, to maybe even change some of the language in there. So for me personally, I'm not sure what others are thinking. I think it would make sense to defer this for further review based on what you just said. And
now, I went through this last week, so I'm going to be right up front with you. No more outbursts, no clapping, no booing, no anything. Okay? Or we will ask people to leave the room.
You can watch it on Mr. Kramer's.
You can watch it on Mr. Kramer's video thing. Whatever. That's not a lot.
So I'm just throwing it out there. I mean, obviously, it makes sense. A big decision. We just received a lot of information, a lot of testimony from our county attorney. And for me, it just is common sense to digest that. So to me, I would like to make a motion to defer.
A motion, Mr. Arlette, to defer. Do we have a second for the motion? Have a second for the motion. Motion dies for lack of a second. Anything else for anybody? Mr. Moore, if you'd please read the short title.
An ordinance to add a new chapter 117 to Sussex County Code entitled Labor Unions to prohibit certain union matters in private sector employment, including prohibition of mandatory union membership and payment of union dues or fees as condition of employment, involuntary union pay deduction, and acts of coercion related to union support or membership.
Pleasure, Council.
Let's see. I'll make a motion that we adopt the ordinance.
Motion, Mr. Cole. Do we have a second?
Second.
Second, Mr. Burton. We have a motion and a second. Any questions on that? And I will remind again, as we take our vote, please keep the noise to yourself. Well, it's all over with you. Go outside and jump up and down. Do what do you want to do? But not in this chamber. Take a vote, Mr. Arlette.
Yeah, I...
This is a motion to approve.
It is, yes. So I think, number one, again, I want to appreciate the community and this council for even getting to this point. I think it's important as a community to have this dialogue because I've said last week what we all have in common, no matter what colors of our shirts, and that is we all want a job. We all want to provide for our families. We all need, we all understand that we have to do something as a community and perhaps even as a council to attract new industries. We have to. I think all sides agree to that. Question is, before us today, is this a tool in that toolbox? That's the question. Is this a tool in that toolbox as a community that we should consider? And I think based on the testimony, there's plenty of organizations out there that support this. I don't need to reiterate them again. State Chamber all the way down to the local chamber here in Rehoboth and Dewey. So people want this. Business communities want this. Obviously, quite a few others, don't agree with that. They think it's going to affect the unions. And so ultimately, I believe in the power of choice. I believe in the power of the person. And so to me, if it's worthy of 6 school districts in this county, why isn't it worthy of the private sector? That's just a common sense answer, common sense analogy. The other part of the equation is the legal piece. It's an important part of the equation. We've had differing opinions on that, and truth be told, I'm not an attorney. None of us are up here that have a vote. And so that's why we have a legislative body. That's why there's a court system to determine what is lawful, what is not lawful. And I think if we had another attorney over here today, they probably would counter that opinion. That's just not what we do. So I would just say on the merits of economic development and the fact is that it is about, to me, it's just about choice. And so to me, if it has the ability to attract jobs to this county, then we should consider it and let the courts make their decision as they see fit. So for that reason alone, and based on the testimony and the record, I will vote in favor of this.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Burton.
Well, this is one of the harder decisions of my career. And not just in my short term as a county council member, but in my total decision-making career. This is a really big deal. Either way it's decided, it's a big deal. And I've given a lot of thought to it. And I was elected to improve the economic opportunities for families in Sussex County. I want more businesses to locate here, and I want more people to be employed here so my kids and grandkids do not have to leave Sussex County to find a good-paying job. I support any initiative that improves the economic landscape in Sussex County. Who doesn't want that? I mean, we all do. This ordinance and last week's public hearing generated great public conversation, and I came away realizing we all have one thing in common. We all want more opportunities for Sussex County. However, I have great concerns with the ordinance we are being asked to consider today. During the public hearing, there was testimony that the passing of a right-to-work ordinance would help attract businesses to Sussex County. Although I believe the right-to-work ordinance may be a factor for some companies, I firmly believe other factors such as infrastructure, shovel-ready sites, transportation system, strong labor force, competitive, available utilities, low taxes, internet, and good schools all outrank right-to-work for companies looking to locate to Sussex County. These items we can affect right now, with or without a right-to-work ordinance. We all have a responsibility to work towards making Sussex County attractive for businesses. We have to make changes because what we are doing now is not working to attract opportunities to Sussex County. I want to focus on improving these items rather than spending time and public money fighting lawsuits over this ordinance. The passing of a right-to-work ordinance creates challenges as well as opportunities. The first challenge will be a legal challenge. Mr. Moore provided guidance several weeks ago when he stated during a council meeting that the county did not have the authority to approve this ordinance. Mr. Moore has now addressed this in a written legal opinion, which I will say was very thorough, specific, and convincing. Mr. Moore's memo included an extensive analysis of case law, as well as information materials and testimony gleaned from the public hearing process. Others have the same opinion, while others have the opposite. The bottom line is this: if we adopt this ordinance, we will be in litigation. In all likelihood, these arguments would be heard in both the state and the federal court, with litigation lasting for years to come. This will be very expensive, and it will be very time-consuming, and in my opinion, it will be an unnecessary distraction. It was stated in a prior council meeting all costs for these lawsuits would be picked up pro bono by an outside legal firm. All costs were never defined by whom or how much. Oddly, while this offer was stated in an earlier public meeting, it was not mentioned on the record in the public hearing. This fact is of great concern to me, given the amount of publicity this very statement has garnished. I feel it is my sworn obligation to look after taxpayer dollars and how they are spent. I do not believe most taxpayers approve of their money going towards fighting an unavoidable lawsuit. We need to have a firm understanding of how the legal costs and expenses will be paid before passing any ordinance such as this. I also feel that it's my sworn obligation to uphold the law, and we have an opinion from our legal counsel that Sussex County does not have the authority to adopt this ordinance, no matter how much we'd like to. Just because someone or some group offers to pay the legal expenses does not mean we can ignore the law. The next challenge involves the county's insurance coverage. The county has insurance coverage for lawsuits, has the possibility of two lawsuits, both of which could be appealed to higher courts, been vetted with our insurance carrier. Has the possible increase in premiums been explored or questioned by Mr. Arlett? Do we have a firm commitment from our insurance company that it will cover us, knowing our legal counsel has given us an opinion stating that Sussex County does not have the authority to adopt this ordinance under home rule? Just as important, will they continue to cover us? And if so, what will our premiums be? What will our deductible be? I understand our deductible was $25,000 before our previous lawsuits, and it has since raised to $500,000. Additionally, only one insurance carrier agreed to underwrite the county after being dropped by our previous provider. Our premiums took an equally drastic increase. This is a lasting effect above and beyond any claims to cover the county's direct legal expense. Who's going to pay our increased premiums in years to come? Who's going to pay the increased deductibles the next time we are in court on something else? What happens if we can no longer get insurance and we have to self-insure? These would all be legacy costs that the taxpayers would have to fund, even if the direct costs of litigation from this ordinance are paid. All of these questions have not been answered to my satisfaction. We need to clearly know the answers before voting to approve this ordinance. I am also concerned that while we are busy defending ourselves in multiple courts, too much of our attention would be focused on that, no matter who pays for our costs. While we are worrying about the next court date, legal arguments, depositions, and so on, our attention is taken away from things we could be accomplishing, such as infrastructure, available utilities, adequate zoning, and good transportation. I would rather focus on these things that we know we can do. We owe it to the taxpayer to clearly know the answer to these issues that could increase government costs before voting to approve this ordinance. Keeping with the expense topic, the language of this ordinance requires the Sussex County Administrator to enforce this law. I am unclear as to what this means and the effect the enforcement clause would have on Sussex County government. It was never mentioned in the public hearing, nor was it addressed by Councilman Arlett. This will, at the very least, be a significant added expense to the county and likely require the establishment of a standalone, newly created department. I'm a strong proponent of limited government and keeping public expenses low, something that I am very proud of here in Sussex County. The adoption of this ordinance and the enforcement of it would likely cause the expansion of our government and staff to deal with it. That is not something I am comfortable with. In summary, I'm very very dedicated to working on ordinances or anything else to attract new businesses and high-quality jobs for the people of Sussex County. And while I appreciate having these conversations, it is, in my opinion, that there could have been a better method to do so, a method that allows this council to come together and discuss initiatives to improve economic development in Sussex County, instead of creating a decisive atmosphere with no measurable results. I stand ready to work with our elected officials in Dover to give Sussex County the legal authority to enact a right-to-work ordinance or enterprise zones. I call on my colleagues here on council to join me in supporting a resolution asking the Delaware General Assembly to pursue these initiatives. I will do all I can to focus my attention on these goals and ask you to do the same. For these reasons, my vote is no on this.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Wilson.
Well, now you're going through all the verbatim which has been said here, so I'm going to vote no.
Pardon me? You vote no. Okay. Mr. Wilson's vote was no. Is that correct?
I believe that's correct.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Cole.
I will just state that Mr. Burton's comments were very well thought out. This is what happens when you get a snowstorm and you're locked up home for about 3 days and you got nothing else to do. And it was an excellent, I think, it summed up a lot of what I thought. But I will say this, I received a lot of emails addressing the issue of right to work. It was a form letter, a lot of them on the emails, and they said it was just basically wrong, and wrong for Sussex County, wrong for families, wrong for, you know, people, you know, whatever. It hurts businesses. It didn't foster more employment and things like that. It also went on to reference being dangerous and divisive. Now, I agree with divisive. I'm not sure what they meant by dangerous. I don't understand that part of it. So anyway, other than that, and there was other people questioning our intent, our purpose, and benefits. And I think Mr. Burton summed it up, saying that, you know, we all are trying to do what's in the best interest of the county, and in the western side of the county, we've always felt that there we could be doing more, and what we've done in the past hasn't worked, like you said. So I don't really personally agree with a lot of those positions on those form email letters that were in opposition. I do not believe that the right to work would hurt those entities. I think it would be in the benefits of this county. So I would personally, if I felt I could, I would vote for it. I just want you all to know that. I'm heartened by the city of Seaford. They've done it at the local level, at the municipal level. I think that was appropriate. I think it's fine that town council voted unanimously for it. I was again heartened by all that. I think as an elected official, I think that from here on out, I will do whatever I can to encourage other towns, maybe that have industrial parks, to look at this issue and to move forward on it. But right now, it appears that we do not have the legislative ability to do it. And again, with all the reasons Mr. Burton alluded to, I'll have to vote no also, and I wish there was a way I could vote yes, and I think I wish there was a way that we would have been able to tackle this issue. I think it was very informative listening to the testimony on both sides. But again, I just want you all to know, I would have voted for this if I felt I could have done that legally and avoided a lot of the pitfalls that, again, Mr. Burton alluded to with attorney fees and lawsuits and all that stuff. But so my vote's no, Mr. President.
Thank you, sir. I'm going to try to give my Reader's Digest version. I want to thank Mr. Moore for your in-depth research and counsel to this council, spelled differently, obviously. Thank everybody that came and spoke before us last week and gave your opinions. Certainly I realize there's only two sides, and both are very passionate. I do want to do a little background just because there's always some things out there that are in the news and on the radio and everywhere else, TV, stuff like that are not necessarily always exactly factual. I want to cover a couple of those. And Mr. Moore referenced, I attended the meeting in his office months ago, maybe over a year ago now, with Councilman Burton, with the people in attendance as he talked about. I left that meeting with no understanding that we could, in fact, enact this an ordinance. The questions were asked of the people there from Cesarine Institute, and nobody said, in fact, that we could. They thought we could. There were no secret meetings. I was asked to go to a meeting, and obviously, I like most of you, I would assume, if somebody asked you to go to a meeting, you don't take somebody with you because you want to. So after that meeting, at some point in time, all the council was aware I'd attended a meeting. One thing that was said at that meeting, I asked the question, are there companies out there today that if we enact right to work are ready to come to Delaware? Boom. And the answer was an emphatic no. That what it would do if we passed it would make us competitive with other states that are right to work. It was also told to me in that meeting by a person there that there was at least 20 businesses in this county that would welcome right to work, would increase their business, would add on to what they're doing. And I asked them if they would have somebody call me and talk to me about that. Any of those people? Yes, they would do that. And as of 11 o'clock this morning, I have never gotten the first phone call from anybody. I was a little disappointed, I guess, the way the ordinance was trying to be introduced, because that's not how we normally do business here. And to my knowledge, I keep hearing the word out there, I don't know who it's coming from, but stonewalled, that somebody was being stonewalled, we wouldn't move forward. I was never asked about an ordinance being introduced, nor do I think the attorney was or our administrator was. If I'm wrong, please correct me. There was no stonewalling, no putting it off. The time it took to get introduced, because of a couple errors, we got to the time where we had very few meetings left in the year, and we already had agendas set, and I suggested that we would put it off until January 2nd. I certainly think after last week and 5 hours, everybody was here realizes we couldn't have done that with other things going on at the same time. So it made no sense to try to do that. I am sad, I guess, that we've already spent tens of thousands of dollars researching and legal fees and that kind of stuff on something we were told months ago we could not do by our attorney. You heard Mr. Burton reference about the deductible we face and the pro bono idea that somebody would pay for all of our legal expenses. I will tell you this. I sat in federal court on a lawsuit against this council about the Lord's Prayer. And we had pro bono attorneys with us, with our council attorney and the insurance carrier. And the insurance carrier spent $445,000 to defend something I totally believed in, which was the Lord's Prayer. Different scenario, but just keep in mind it's a pro bono. Pro bono was still there, but pro bono doesn't mean everything's free. I'm very concerned we could lose our insurance coverage, which would affect you, the taxpayers, a great deal. I don't think that's fair to you. I think our job is to watch your tax dollars like I watch my own dollars. And that's how I feel about we should be doing that if we can't do it. I agree with everything Mr. Burton said. It was well written, well presented. I agree with everything he said. I also would tell you, I got a couple things I want to read, but I don't think there's anybody in this dais that would not tell you we would do anything we could to bring jobs to this county, no matter what it is. I think that the things that we've all heard before about the necessities to bring people here, infrastructure, broadband, a trained workforce, a way to train a workforce, a number of issues are what we, this council, should be dealing with and trying to get the state to help us deal with that and hopefully move this forward. It's why we're spending millions of dollars to build a new industrial park, to have it shovel ready, which is what people want. So we're trying to do that. So everybody up here, I think, is totally committed to trying to bring jobs to this county. Obviously, we've been told by our attorney we don't have the legal authority to enact this ordinance based on his opinion, as well as the support of the Solicitor General of the State of Delaware, the opinion of the House Minority Caucus. The idea about the ordinance pertaining to employees' pay deductions and coercion intimidation are issues that were not addressed at the public hearing. And the justification, implementation, and cost of such measures has not been discussed. Adoption of this ordinance would subject Sussex County to potential litigation instituted by multiple parties at both state and federal level. Even if outside groups file briefs on or offer other assistance on Sussex County behalf, the county will continue to incur legal expenses because we'll always have our attorney present. That's who represents us, our attorney. We talked about the insurance carrier. No testimony has been presented by anybody as to how this ordinance will affect the county budget in terms of projected administrative and legal costs Sussex County will incur, implement the ordinance and enforce compliance under the sections, including creation of a new department's own staff. Although numerous persons referenced that passage would bring in more manufacturing jobs and businesses, not one person or business stated they would relocate here if passed. For those reasons, the reason Mr. Burton read, my vote is no, motion defeated. No applause. No anything. No anything. Mr. Lawson.
Mr. President, I have one question for counsel. We've been referencing Mr. Moore's attorney-client privilege covered memo. It's up to this council if this memo would be made public. I see no reason why it shouldn't be made public, but...
I'll make a motion we make that opinion public.
Memo meaning... I'm sorry, just memo meaning the legal opinion. Got it.
Yeah. We have a motion to make
second.
A second. Any questions on that motion? Take the vote. Mr. Arlette?
Yes.
Mr. Burton?
Yes.
Mr. Wilson?
Yes.
Mr. Cole?
Yes.
I mean, motion carried. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Now, if